ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
All of this could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
The 45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
Lars.
And yes, together, we will make America great again.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
Now, here's Lars Larson on FM News 101.
Well, happy Monday and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show, serving the Pacific Northwest with Honestly Provocative Talk Radio. And there is a lot on our minds today. I'll tell you what, we'll keep an eye on what's going on nationally. We've got the Trump TikTok coming up as well. And our quick poll today, this just sounds like one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. Actually, it's only a little bit dumber than the idea of letting cougar run wild all over the Pacific Northwest, as well as bringing back the wolf to the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, let's bring some real top of the apex predators back so that they can kill wild game. No, this one goes beyond that. There is now a formal proposal to do what they call reintroducing man-killing grizzly bears to the Cascade Mountains of the Northwest. They're actually holding public hearings on this right now. And some of the organizations that represent those of us who like to get out in the out of doors say, is it a really good idea to bring in something that doesn't even have some natural enemies like a grizzly bear and start populating the Pacific Northwest mountains with them? It doesn't sound like a good idea to me. I'll give you my thoughts shortly. Again, the Trump TikTok is coming up, but you can vote in the quick poll by going to LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, or topsoil. Let the Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. There was a huge decision last week involving a man who pulled a gun in self-defense, and there is video of the incident, so all of us have seen it. It happened last year. And on Friday, the man was convicted of more than a dozen criminal counts for simply defending himself. We'll talk with Kevin Sterrett from the Oregon Firearms Federation. Why is the FDA dragging its feet on approving a new kind of smokeless tobacco that they say could be a whole lot safer than smoking? Should Seattle and Washington State hide information about illegal aliens? It turns out that some of the politicians, like Governor Jay Inslee, are saying we're going to hide the ball when it comes to looking for illegal aliens in the Evergreen State. I think that's pretty dumb as well. Should a bill for rent control and no-cause evictions be overturned because it violates state law? We'll talk to Representative Sal Esquivel about that. Oregon's Secretary of State is going to join us to talk about, well, investigating voter fraud, unregistered voters, public records, and a lot of the other things that secretaries of state have to do with. You might have heard over the weekend that parts of Interstate 5 near Bellingham were blocked by about 100 demonstrators, including some children who were brought along. There were traffic accidents as a result. What should happen to the protesters who go out and block Northwest freeways? It has happened in a number of Northwest cities, and it seems as though the anti-Trump or I hate Trump crowd just grows and grows and grows. The Oregon legislature is planning a whopping big property tax increase if the voters will approve it. If it goes on the ballot, and you might have to pay an additional $3,000 a year in property taxes, would you vote yes on that as well? We'll talk to Representative Gina McCabe from the Washington House of Representatives about whether or not school buses should have required safety belts, and if so, why not public buses as well? Should an off-duty county sheriff, in this case, we're talking about Ozzie Knezovich from Spokane County, he showed up at a hockey game last week, and he was told, because you're not wearing your uniform, even though we know that you're the sheriff of the county, you're not allowed to carry a concealed weapon. My friend, comrade Juan Williams from Fox News is going to join us later on this afternoon. And should former Governor John Kitzhaber gain political rehabilitation before the federal investigation into the alleged crimes of John Kitzhaber and his girlfriend have even finished? The investigation is still going on, but he's trying to make himself look a whole lot better. We'll get to all of that and your phone calls and your emails. And naysayers always go to the head of the line, but be ready to answer a few questions and engage in a real conversation at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
The most basic human right in the world is the right of self-defense. But after a judge's ruling last week in the case of Mike Strickland, that right apparently no longer exists, at least in one Northwest county. Strickland works as an independent journalist, monitoring some of the crazy political protests that have made the streets of Northwest cities a dangerous place for the last few months. During one of the protests last year, a group of protesters began advancing on Strickland with signs on poles in their hands. He was afraid. He backed up and he told the protesters to stay away, but they kept coming. Finally, Strickland pulled the licensed concealed carry pistol, pointed it toward protesters for literally a few seconds, and there is video of the incident. Police did not arrest those threatening Strickland. Instead, they charged the victim with a dozen gun crimes. One-third of an attempted jury pool was made up of folks who don't think anyone should carry a gun despite a state law that says you're allowed to do it, so a judge handled the trial. The judge refused to hear evidence that 6 months before this attack, Strickland had been mugged by protesters, his arm broken, his shoulder dislocated, and his equipment destroyed. Apparently not relevant in Portlandia. Last week, Strickland was convicted for defending himself. Now, you may not care about that today, but if the day ever comes that you have to defend yourself, you could end up in jail for doing just that.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, today's Daily Grill was suggested by loyal Lars listener Richard Wakefield, who wrote in, Lars, I hope you address the serious car accidents in Bellingham, Washington, Saturday afternoon caused by North Dakota pipeline protesters. They literally stopped their cars on I-5, chained themselves together. It caused numerous accidents as drivers rear-ended each other. Organizers appear to be a hybrid of the Seattle Hispanic protesters and local Native Americans. At least two involved work for Western Washington University, and one of them is a student. No arrests were made because WSP said they were caught flat-footed and had just one officer available to deal with that mess. Today's best email, but you can certainly send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. It comes from John Harith in Seattle, listening on KVI. Lars, it is totally unacceptable and probably very illegal to block an interstate highway that could possibly interfere with emergency vehicles, perishable goods, and interstate commerce. These protesters should be held financially responsible for their actions and assessed for all the damages connected with their illegal blockade of an interstate highway. Their actions are criminal, and they must face the court and answer for their crime, signed John in Seattle. I will tell you, we're going to talk to our friend Dylan Honkoop from KGMI, one of our Northwest affiliates, a little bit later on this afternoon. And now the TikTok.
What a great honor to be able to introduce for the first time ever anywhere the 45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
It's now time for the Trump TikTok.
America will no longer settle for anything less than the best.
Lars jumps into President Trump's daily progress. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Well, Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, yes, I think he'll graduate from high school here soon, met for the first time today with President Trump, attempting to bridge the gap in their style and strategy between the two leaders. Mr. Trudeau said that he would defend and demonstrate Canadian values during his face-to-face meeting with the president, but he would do so respectfully and not from an ideological standpoint. And Saturday night, President Trump's Florida Mar-a-Lago Mar-a-Lago resort became an open-air situation room as President Trump, along with guest Shinzo Abe, the prime minister from Japan, learned that North Korea had just followed in Iran's footsteps and test-fired a ballistic missile. In a joint statement, the prime minister warned, North Korea's most recent missile launch is absolutely intolerable. President Trump and I, myself, completely share the view that we are going to promote further cooperation between our nations and we are going to further reinforce our alliance. And President Trump is now facing intense pressure to cut ties with his national security advisor, Mike Flynn, following reports that Flynn lied to top administration officials. For months, Flynn has denied that he discussed U.S. sanctions with Russia or with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. in a phone call prior to Trump's inauguration. But on Thursday, the Washington Post reported the topic had indeed surfaced, citing 9 independent sources, all of whom had knowledge of Flynn's calls. It might cause you to ask this question. How is it that so many of the phone calls out of the White House are apparently being tapped and transcribed and then supplied to the opponents of the President of the United States? And what would you have said had that been true during the Obama administration? Do you like all the leaks that are coming out from the folks who still work in government? And let's hope those who are doing this kind of thing end up with pink slips real soon. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. Coming up in a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Lots of issues in the Northwest. I'll get back to your calls shortly. Kevin Stara joins me now from the Oregon Firearms Federation, which fights for Second Amendment rights at the state level. Kevin, it's good to have you back on the program, but these circumstances are kind of tough.
They're terrifying, Lars. I don't think of, you know, all the legal cases that we've been involved in. I've never seen one that scared me as much as this. I've never seen one that was so much where I felt the fix was in, where, you know, the person involved never had a chance at a fair trial.
I would agree with you. And I want to make sure people understand we're not just talking about Mike Strickland, because a lot of times people hear stories and they think, well, that guy did something, but I'd never find myself there. There are what, 100,000 or so, or more than 100,000 people in Oregon and a similar number in Washington state who carry a concealed weapon. And the law has always been, if you feel you're threatened, you are allowed to use the gun in a way that defends your life or your safety. But you have to be prepared to say to a jury or a judge, I did this because I feared for my life or my safety. In this case, the man pulled a gun out of a holster. It was out, I think, on the video 3 to 4 seconds. He promptly reholstered it when the threat diminished. And I thought, well, they're not going to touch him. And then heard he'd been charged with what? He was convicted last week of 21 different gun crimes.
21 counts, which is facing 50 years in prison. All right, here's a guy who has never had any issues with the law. Look, what's important, there's a couple of things that are important to understand here, Lars. They went after him because of who he was. The attacks against him were coordinated and planned in advance. That was admitted. Here's a guy who was attacked, seriously injured, and robbed by a known assailant in Multnomah County. The entire attack was on videotape. And Rod Underhill, the Multnomah County DA, refused to prosecute somebody who he knew unequivocally committed the crime. We had videos. We knew who he was. And that was because the attack was against Mike Strickland, whose videos showed the hypocrisy of the left in this state. And this is what makes it so scary. So Michael had already been attacked once by a leftist thug. The Underhill refused to prosecute that guy. Now he's in a situation which I can tell you, as a firearms instructor, I believe he did everything exactly right. When he de-escalated the situation and backed away, they criticized him for that. They said he wasn't in danger because he holstered his gun. But look, here's the important thing. They said he should have run away. Well, there were a lot of reasons why he couldn't run away. He backed away as quickly as possible. But in Oregon, you do not have a requirement to run away from an attacker. That is black letter law. And so for the judge to ignore that fact, to ignore the videos, and now to hide from the public the videos that Michael took while he was being attacked, there's no question in my mind that this was set up from the get-go. And I want to point something else out here, Lars. You could find yourself in this exact situation. I have seen you go among those people to report while you did your show. Imagine if these people tried to kill you or kill you and your family and you defended yourself. Can you imagine the size of the target that's on your back?
Oh, yeah.
Because of your views in the county that you work in? This is terrifying stuff.
And by the way, this is an environment in the Northwest, two big blue states, where ordinarily I hear this phrase over and over again. Somebody somebody was attacked for who they were. And usually we're applying that to somebody who's attacked because they're Jewish, because they're gay, because they're black, because they're Hispanic, because somebody thinks they're an illegal alien, and they are physically attacked. And I've never backed somebody up for just physically attacking somebody because of who they are. And yet, here's who Mike Strickland is. He chooses to be an independent journalist, to go out, as you say, and watch these people. And we've run plenty of audio from Mike where he has, you know, he's shown the left saying the most outrageous, crazy, illegal things. And it's only captured because he has the guts to go down there and shoot this video. So they attacked him for who he is. And I think he serves a public purpose. But at this point, convicted of these crimes, even if he doesn't go to jail or prison, he will likely never be able to carry a gun again, which means he'll be permanently put with an even bigger target on him. And in all likelihood, because of the restrictions, the restrictions the judge has placed on him, saying, I'm not going to send you to jail. We're going to let you stay free pending appeal. But you're to stay away from all these people. I don't know if it's 1,000 feet or 500 feet. The very folks he covers, he's now not allowed to get around.
Right, and these are people who attacked him, and they knew who he was. There's no question. You can hear them on the videotape screaming, that's laughing at liberals. And there's plenty of evidence that indicates that these people conspired to do this in the first place. And look, these people riot, and they all walk free. 15 of the 19 people who were arrested in one of the last riots aren't even being charged. The Multnomah County is conspiring with these leftist thugs, allowing them to do whatever they want, and then taking a guy who just protected himself. And look, I've watched this thing very carefully. I know Michael. I've seen the circumstances. I know what the people tried to do to him. The decision in this case was absolutely that judge had him convicted the moment he was arrested. No rational person would say, look, then they have to drag in this cop from Gresham who says, well, Michael was wrong because there were innocent people there, and he swept people with his gun. Well, when there's a mob of 75 people around you, you tell me how that does not happen. It's just, it on its face is so absurd. It's such a travesty. It's such an injustice that I tell you, in the gun classes that I do now around the state, I tell people, I've told my family and I've told my friends, do not go into Multnomah County if you have any possible choice about it. And for someone like you, I got to tell you, I mean, I worry about you. I worry about any journalist who isn't toeing the leftist line, because the target on your back is enormous.
Well, Kevin, first of all, in 23 years of caring, I've never had cause to take it out of the holster. And I hope I never do. I hope I would never be faced with that choice. But I called the DA's office and said, you need to give the people in this county some instruction. What is the new standard? Because you've obviously invented a new one. Kevin, I got a break, but I think people ought to be very afraid of what law enforcement and the DA are doing in a case like this. Kevin Sterrett from the Oregon Firearms Federation. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. One of the issues we talk about from time to time is tobacco and the use of tobacco in the United States. And people say, gosh, that's something we have to get people to stop smoking. Well, I've always thought that tobacco, one of America's first exports, and it was, I think, the single largest export for the first 100 years, before the United States became the United States, that's a good old-fashioned American product, and it's your choice whether to use it or not. I smoke cigars from time to time. But the issue has come up, can we get people to a safer version? Vaping is one route to go there. But Tim Donahue joins me now, who's assistant editor for Tobacco Reporters. Tim, it's good to have you on the program.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me.
And I'll give credit to Reason Magazine, which is a libertarian magazine, where they talk about a product called Swedish Match that apparently is a fairly big product in Europe, because they sell about $14 billion worth of it every year, and they employ about 5,000 people. But this company has had one heck of a time getting into the United States. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the product is snus that Swedish Match makes, and it is shown to be about 97% less harmful than cigarettes. But the United States doesn't necessarily, or has never let a new tobacco product come to market ever since the 2007 predicate date. Snus is the first product to be accepted to even go through the process and pass the PMTA. And recently, they filed for an MRTP, which may go through, but they'll have to do some modifications to wording.
And what is an MRTP?
That is a modified risk tobacco product. The MRTP is kind of like the second stage at the FDA. So not only is this tobacco product safer, that's why they let it on the market with the PMTA, now I can say and tell the public it's safer after having the MRTP.
And if they don't get that, they can't sell the product here?
No, they can sell it here. They are currently selling snus here. And what makes snus safer than what we'll call dip tobacco would be generally referred to,
yeah,
is snus is pasteurized. So the pasteurization kills off a lot of the tobacco-specific nitrosamines, and that's one of the primary carcinogens out of tobacco.
And it's obviously been, the Europeans have adopted this, I mean, to a large number. When I looked the company up, it looks like they do $14.5 billion a year. That's a lot of product.
Oh, yeah. Swedish Match is a large company and a great family-owned company. The thing about it in Europe, though, snus is actually banned in most of Europe except for Sweden, where it's legal. So they do most of their sales there. Europe, Swedish Match is fighting to get it sold in Europe, but it hasn't been approved yet there.
Even though you could make a health, that if somebody has to make a choice, I know that the anti-smoking folks say, well, we just want you to quit tobacco altogether. But if you're not ready to do that, and obviously about 20% of Americans are not ready to do that, if you could go to a safer form using nicotine, then that'd be an improvement, right?
Yeah, unquestionably. And why the FDA doesn't allow it is beyond me.
Now, is there...
Why can't vapors say the same thing?
Well, and see, I've looked at the vapor argument, too. The Brits, as I understand, the Brits actually view that as a positive move. If somebody goes from cigarette smoking to vaping, they view that as a positive. In America, the health authorities have taken the view that they're absolutists. They want you to get off cigarettes and not go to any other form, even if the other form is demonstrably, safer.
Yeah, it's more anti-nicotine, isn't it?
Yeah, and the funny thing is when I've had doctors on and talked to them about nicotine, no matter what their bias is for against cigarettes, I've said, is it less harmful if you're not inhaling all those burn products? And they say, oh, yeah. And I said, well, then characterize for me how dangerous is nicotine by itself? And they say, well, obviously they sell nicotine gum. They sell nicotine patches. They said the stuff is probably not a whole lot more dangerous for you than, say, caffeine that people have in soda pop and in coffee and even hot chocolate. That the stuff by itself may raise your blood pressure a little bit or have some of those other effects, but without the burn products, it becomes not that dangerous. If you're going to argue against nicotine use, you should probably tell Americans they should stop drinking coffee as well.
You're absolutely right, Lars. And the thing about snus that even separates itself, I kind of believe in a sense of further than vapor, because you're not inhaling anything with snus. I mean, you're just putting a pouch up under your lip, and because it's pasteurized, it's kind of a cleaner form of nicotine that gets absorbed into your gums and you throw it away. No tobacco product is perfectly safe, but snus is extremely safer than cigarettes.
Do you anticipate that the FDA is going to change its tune now that the Trump administration is appointing, people to various cabinet posts, and likely we're going to see some changes in the personnel at some of these agencies?
We can only hope, if we can get rid of Mitch Zeller at the Center for Tobacco Products and change the head of the FDA, I think we can definitely see some of this regulation pulled back.
All right. And at that point, do you ever think that we'll get to the point where, as I said, Great Britain promotes vaping as an alternative? And as you said, this could be even safer than that. Do you think American, health authorities might say, well, OK, if you're going to go use something else, use something that's safer. And we'd actually encourage people to go that direction instead of simply saying no nicotine use whatsoever.
Yeah, but the pharmaceutical companies want to keep selling those nicotine patches and gum. So, yeah. It's all about lobbying there, isn't it?
Tim, do you think that that's part of it? Or could it be even domestic tobacco producers who don't want to see this come in? But is it the pharmaceutical industry that's pushing the FDA not to approve this?
Oh, absolutely, it has to, because you know, even when we look at huge tobacco companies like, you know, Philip Morris International, Altria, these companies all have their own vapor products too. RJ Reynolds, that's used. So they're embracing the vapor revolution, if you will. And, you know, who doesn't want to come off of having to pay all the tobacco taxes that they pay?
Yeah, because that may be another part of it. The government has its own dog in the fight, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Think of all the state, small local governments and state governments that use that tobacco money. Now, if they don't have that tobacco tax money anymore, they're going to have to replace those funds somewhere.
So what's the next shot for Swedish Match to take another run at this? Is it going to come later on this year, or how does the process work?
I would imagine the first thing they're going to do, and again, you know, I don't work for Swedish Match, so...
You're just
I imagine they're going to sit down with the FDA and have some discussion, which usually means that they're going to tell the FDA, you know, this is where we're at. We don't understand what you want us to do. And then however long period it takes the FDA to respond, it took them 2 years to respond to this MRTP. So whenever they respond, and then, you know, Swedish Match will move forward from there. But I'm pretty sure this issue is they'll at least get some of it passed, because a lot of the issue is just wording. They're wondering how the public is going to perceive something, which brings up another interesting thing is, so in the tobacco industry, apparently the FDA wants the tobacco company to come up with the labels and warnings for the public. But in the food industry, the FDA comes out with all that stuff and tells the companies what they need to put on there. So I'm not really sure why that's different either.
Maybe it's that they figure they can always blame the companies, in the case of the tobacco companies, for coming up with a label, whereas they have to own whatever labels are required to be put on food products.
Hey, you're a genius.
Hey, Tim, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks very much. Where can people find your work online?
Oh, tobaccoreporter.com and vaporvoice.com.
Very good. Tim, thanks very much for the time.
Yeah, thank you, Lars.
Glad to have you on. Tim Donahue with us. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and your emails. And we'll ask you this. For the information that Seattle and Washington State have that might tell you where those illegal aliens are, state officials, including the governor, have said they plan to hide that information from the federal government, should they be doing that. We'll get into that as well and take your phone calls and emails at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Quick poll today. Should we introduce man-killing grizzly bears to the Cascade Mountains? Yep, they're holding public hearings on it already. Hey, everybody, who else wants to see the federal government, with the cooperation of the state governments, restore, which means bring them here for the first time, grizzly bears to the Cascade Mountains? Grizzlies, they will remind you, are part of nature. Of course, nature also includes anthrax, bubonic plague, black widows, and rattlesnakes. So isn't it wonderful that they're planning to use your tax dollars to populate the places that many of us recreate in with man-killing predators? I mean, what could possibly go wrong? Let's go first to Curtis. Hey, Curtis, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, thanks, Lars, for taking my call. I just had a couple questions. After the interview with that firearms instructor talking about Michael Strickland.
Yeah.
And the ruling, what exactly are we supposed to do as concealed weapon holders in the county of Multnomah County, if we're faced with a situation where we have to pull our weapon or we're supposed to, or defend ourselves in our home? What is it that we're supposed to do when the law clearly states that we have to stand our ground, or, you know, we can defend ourselves? What is it that we're supposed to do in the eyes of Multnomah County law?
Bring a toothbrush, because they don't give out very good toothbrushes in prison.
Oh, and that's unfortunate. That's what it sounds like, because I tell you what, it's not a good thing when you arbitrarily make a decision not based on what the law says.
Do you think that it'll be any different in King County or Lane County? I mean, there are a few counties around the Northwest where I think they make sensible decisions. But when this case first came up, I called the local DA, Rod Underhill. Do you think he called me back? I got a hold of one of his chief deputies last week and spent about 20 minutes asking him the same thing. What is your direction to the public going to be now that you've adopted a brand new standard that says even when a group of people is threatening a man, and it could have been a woman just as easily, that person is not allowed to pull the gun until what? What is the new standard? Because The standard that's written in the law is when you feel that your life is threatened. Now, you know, if somebody's walking down the street and they see somebody, a person of color, and they say, that person, because he was black, I was scared of him, so I pulled my gun. Yeah, that idiot should get charged. But when you have a group of people advancing on you, they have, you know, sticks and poles in their hands that they can use as weapons. You have been previously injured by being attacked by this same group of people, members of the same group of people, and they're threatening you. You pull the gun out. They see it. They immediately back off, and you walk away and holster the gun. What's the harm? I mean, at that point, I thought Mike Strickland presented a poster child case for how to do it. You know, that you don't do it until you're threatened, and the minute the threat is gone, you holster the weapon. Instead, he's looking at, as Kevin said, 50 years in prison.
Well, based on real-world scenarios, those three counties are something we have to worry about, because he pretty much can go into any other counties in Oregon, and they pretty much are the other side of Oregon that we're talking about, the 48 or 49%. Then we're talking about the three counties that make up the 51 or 52% that always vote in the stuff we don't like and elect the people we don't like. So
that's right.
Based on that, those three counties are telling us, everybody else, that we can't defend ourselves, that we can't protect our families. And if we do protect our families, we probably be better prepared to be punished by law or even go to prison.
I mean, Curtis,
protecting our families.
Curtis, I agree with you. Later on this afternoon, I'm going to talk to Ozzy Knezovich, who's the sheriff of Spokane County. He went to the hockey game last week in Spokane, and they said, I'm sorry, sheriff, you can't come in with your gun. Now, number one, that's stupid on steroids. You can't let the county sheriff enter this public place with a gun. And then what really makes it crazy is if he had been wearing his uniform, he could have come in with the gun. But because he was wearing a suit and tie to the hockey game, he was not allowed to enter the arena. That's the kind of insanity that we're up against right now. Let's go to Kelly in Bend. Hey, Kelly, thanks for listening on KBND. What's on your mind?
Lars, hey, thanks so much for taking my call, sir. I'm just, that kind of goes along with exactly what I was going to ask you, you know, regarding Strickland, with this insanity that's going on right now with him. I'm just wondering, what's your advice for people who are, or at least were considering getting their concealed weapons, but now, because of this, people are going to be afraid to obviously get it, especially living in such a liberal area. What's your advice for people that, you know, that we're wanting to, but now are second-guessing it?
I hope that people still feel they can exercise their Second Amendment rights, even in the crazy blue states of Oregon and Washington. But you're going to have to be very, very careful. And I guess what Strickland should have done was waited until one other person hit him. And even at that point, you realize that part of what he was charged with was because he's pointing his gun at the guy who's advancing on him, there are four or five people behind that guy, which made it a problematic place to fire a shot. But the whole point of the gun was to get the bad guys to stop advancing on him, which it did without firing a shot. But he was charged and convicted of pointing his gun at people who were standing behind them some distance away. And they said, well, you also committed the crime against them. Well, does that mean that every time a police officer pulls his gun out and points it at somebody, and that person has another person standing behind him who hasn't done anything, that the officer is guilty of a crime? I mean, and if you say it's different, go ahead.
If you're liberal, then yeah.
I guess, but I mean, because the strange thing is the liberals are constantly saying if you attack someone for who they are, because they're gay, because they're Jewish, because they're black, because they're an illegal alien or whatever, that you can't do that. Well, now it turns out that apparently people can attempt to assault you or intimidate you, and they've committed no crime as long as your politics are conservative. In the Northwest, effectively, being a conservative means that you're a criminal. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by, playback.
And now,
Lars. Red Meat Radio.
Should be played at high volume.
This is the Lars Larson Show, broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Together, we will make America great again.
Mexico will never pay for that f***ing wall.
Now, here's Lars Larson on FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you on a Monday and glad to take your calls, too, at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And Representative Sal Esquivel joins me now, representing District 6 in the Oregon House of Representatives, mostly the Medford area. How you doing, Sal?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing great, but I'd be doing a whole lot better if I didn't see people in government agencies all over the Northwest trying to, you know, put all these new restrictions on landlords, not because I am one, although I have been one, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, but it just seems like it's going to work against the interests of the people, because people who want to rent a house are going to have a tough time finding one if you keep strapping the landlords down to where they can't, you know, turn a profit on these things.
Well, I maybe you know, but I'm not sure where rent controls ever worked.
No, it has never worked, and I always make the case that if you look at New York or San Francisco or other places, it actually works against people. It means that landlords will not keep their properties up because they can't afford to, and it works against the good tenants. This no-cause eviction stuff, it seems to work against the well-behaved people. And it works in favor of those who are the biggest problem tenants. And we've all lived next to a problem tenant, you know, or had one in the complex. And we realize, and I know that there are people who've gone to the landlord and said, why don't you get this guy out of here? He's always parking in somebody else's spot. He dumps his garbage. He lets his dogs run around all over. He runs his music till 2 a.m. Why don't you get rid of him? And now the landlord can say, because the city council or the state legislature said, I can't.
Well, and it also has a hidden effect as well, because it's escalation of the price of homes themselves. And I'm going to give you a fine example of that. We have a son that lives in New York, and he and his wife about 12 years ago bought a little apartment, two-bedroom apartment, about 900 square feet, 800 square feet, something like that, paid over $500,000 for it.
Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And that's the going rate then.
Well, maybe they're trying to, and then they'll turn around and say, now that housing is unaffordable, we'll have to have the government subsidize it for people, which also does not bring the cost down. It tends to push the cost back up.
Well, and I'm going to share with you, when I was in small business committee in the House Small Business Committee, we had an individual came in from Portland, and he said that he was a contractor, and he said he would purchase a lot for $80,000, and then the city of Portland would turn around and throw a $40,000 bill on top of that for SDCs. Well, how is that affordability?
No, especially...
If you want affordability, you better look in the mirror, Portland, because you're part of the problem. The other part of the problem is lack of land.
Well, tell me this. What happens when the state legislature passes a law that says you can't impose rent control, and then a renegade city like Portland says, we're just going to do it anyway, which seems to be what they've done.
Well, if we had an attorney general, the attorney general would go after them.
But obviously, Ellen Rosenblum is not going to do that.
No, she won't do that. I mean, she's as politically as they come, you know, and it's fairly obvious to me that she is.
So this is going to now require that a couple of property owners who filed suit today, I guess, to sue the city of Portland over this policy, that they'll have to let this thing wind its way through the court system. And in the meantime, the restrictions are still there.
That's correct, and I think that they have a great case, because I believe that they violated the law. So, but it still costs people money, and I think they should be reimbursed from the city of Portland.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you, and I know that Seattle's no different. They keep whining about how much it costs to rent a house or an apartment or a condo, and then they turn around and put more requirements on the landowner or the property owner, saying you have to do all these other things, as though that's going to bring down the cost, when in fact it sends them the other direction.
Well, and, you know, this no cause, you can't let someone get out of a lease. If you don't redo a lease, then that you have to pay them to move. And, you know, then there's a 5% cap on what you – I mean, this is – who owns these buildings? Does the legislature own them, and the government, or is it the individual themselves? I always thought it was the individual, but the government seems to think that it knows more about your business than you do.
Well, and Sal, what I keep hearing is this means that landlords will now write tighter rental agreements. They'll say, sure, if we said no pets, it means no pets. If we said no noise after 10 o'clock at night, then when your stereo or your TV is still up at 10:10, we're going to write you down, and they'll just create new ways to find cause to kick you out, which I think when people have to sit down and look at those agreements, they're going to say, why do you have all these crazy agreements or requirements? And the landlord's going to say, so that if you start getting out of line, that I can give you a for-cause eviction, because otherwise the city wants me to pay $4,500 to move your sorry rear end.
Well, and the sad part about that, Lars, is, you know, you can fight anything with a countersuit or a suit itself. If I were in violation of my contractual agreement, I could still file suit on you and tie you up and make you spend a lot of money.
Yeah, and that none of that makes it any cheaper to be a landlord or to run housing. So, I mean, I wish I could get some of these people like Chloe Udaly to come on the air so I could ask her, when you make it more expensive for a landlord to maintain a property, who does that hurt? And I think the short answer is it hurts everybody who's a responsible tenant that just wants to rent a place to live in, and they're going to end up paying the cost for all the knuckleheads.
Well, but I mean, that's the way laws work, Lars. I mean, you're always making laws for the 5% bad people or the 1% bad people, whatever that percentage is. And the rest of the people that do things right, they're the ones that end up are inconvenienced or pay for it.
No, none of this stuff makes any sense. I guess I can have no faith that a legislature dominated by Democrats in both houses and the governor's office is going to do anything about this.
Well, in my opinion, I'm not even sure they're going to be able to get this one through, though.
Well, you mean in terms of the restriction put on by the city of Portland? I think they'll do any crazy thing that comes into their heads. I don't think they give a damn.
Four bills that we have.
Oh, the four bills, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that will pass.
Well, I'm glad to see it's not going to pass at the state level, but the fact that they do it at the local level is just going to gum things up something terrible. And unfortunately, nobody out there seems to understand the economics, that if you make it more expensive for the landlord to run his business, who pays that cost? The tenants pay the cost. Sal, I really appreciate the time. Thanks very much.
Take care, and you have a good one, Lars.
And you as well. Representative Sal Esquivel, coming up in a moment, the brand new Republican Secretary of State, Dennis Richardson. And I'll tell you what, we're going to talk to him about voter registration, illegal aliens, violating the law, public records. We're going to talk to him about all of that and his idea that the Secretary of State's position should be a nonpartisan office. Not sure I agree with that, but Secretary of State Dennis Richardson is coming up next, right here on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and glad always to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program, I think for the first time in his role as Oregon's first Republican Secretary of State in so many years, Dennis Richardson. Mr. Secretary of State, thanks for taking the time today.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Lars.
So, are you getting things done, and are you running into some fights? Because we can talk about how the governor tried to take over one of your roles and move it into her office.
Well, I'm getting a lot done. There's so much to learn. I've been here for 5 weeks, and you know, it's like becoming the CEO of a conglomerate with four different corporations. I mean, the elections division is different than the archives, which is different than the corporations division, which is certainly different than the audits division. But all of them are important. And so we're looking to make sure that we have a clear understanding with the people that work here as to what the principles are that we're promoting, which is to be more transparent, more accountable, and to restore trust to the people in this state agency. And so it's going fine. The issue you brought up is an interesting one, and that is that the governor is creating a facilitator for disclosing public records, and the question is, should it be placed in the Secretary of State's office, which was originally intended, or should it be in the Department of Administrative Services? So I've met with the governor on it, and I've explained, you know, that I understand whatever is given, is whatever the law is, that's what we're going to do. But I've recommended that it should be in the archives office because we have Mary Beth Heckert there, and the archives department has all of the documents. They have access to all of the emails and all the things that get requested, and it would make sense to have them all together.
Well, and let me ask you this. Is there a political end to this? Because I'd remind you know the history as well as I do, that we've had a governor leave office over questions of improper behavior, Governor Kitzhaber, and some of that case came back to a question of who owns the state's emails and whether or not public officials who send and receive emails should consider them public records or not. So we've just gone through an experience like that, and I wonder whether or not you think that the governor's attempt to put the, you know, this advocate for public records somewhere else is because of a concern that there might be politicians exposed if those public records were made available to the public who owns them.
Well, I think it's probably that she's concerned about me, that she's concerned that I will be political in the way that it's administered. And what I've reminded her is that the archivist, Mary Beth Heckert, is beyond politics. And everybody understands that. She's been here for more than 25 years. When Kate Brown was the Secretary of State, she knew her and worked very closely with her. And so it makes sense to me, and hopefully ultimately to the governor, that this work to have facilitation of public records disclosure should be in the archivist's office, because there's no place in government that's less partisan than there.
Mr. Secretary of State, we've also had look, over the years, I've found it gets harder and harder for members of the public, especially journalists and people who are interested in particular, you know, issues. They're advocates for one issue or another. It seems as though it's getting harder and harder to get access to the documents that show what our government is doing. What are you going to do as Secretary of State to try to make it go the other direction and make it easier?
Well, one thing is I want more records online so they're easily discoverable. You know, we have them in digital form. Why not put as many as possible online? We also need to not allow the continued increase in cost, where if you want discovery of records that you have to end up paying huge amounts of money to get access and to wait and, you know, a much too long of a time. And so what we're going to do is speed up the process, and we're going to make it less expensive, and where possible, remove the expense, but sometimes we just can't afford to do that.
Ms. Secretary of State, you surprised me when you indicated that apparently you're in favor of seeing the office you occupy become a nonpartisan office. Why would that be a good thing?
Well, I think that it should be administered in a nonpartisan way. And so by making it a nonpartisan office, you're sending the message that this is not supposed to be something that is focused on the principles of being a Republican or a Democrat. The Secretary of State's office should be run for the people in a nonpartisan way. And so the bill that I propose to make it a nonpartisan office is to make that message loud and clear.
The only thing I worry about, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, is that in places where they've gone to a top two system for elections, if they tend to be very blue states like Washington State, that what you see is the public is then given a choice between left and lefter rather than, and there is a difference in people's approach to public records or to the Bureau of Labor and Industries or any of these other offices that are held. It seems that, you know, offering the voters a choice of two Democrats is not the same as offering them a, you know, a real marked choice between a Democrat office seeker and a Republican office seeker. How do you overcome that?
Well, even in Washington, you have Republican Secretary of State Kim Wyman in office presently. And I know, and Lars, I don't know all the ins and outs of everything. I'm making the proposal so that the bill would be presented, it would go to a committee, they would get testimony on all aspects of it and make a decision that's going to be best for the people. But I think it's certainly a conversation that we should have.
Let me ask you this. In terms of elections, that's one of your other four corporations that you oversee, so to speak, sure, under Secretary of State. Are you confident that most or all of the people who are registered to vote and who cast ballots are people who are legally here in this country and able to vote as citizens? Or do you think that's something that needs to be checked?
Well, I think we need to always be verifying. But I've been very impressed with the openness and honesty that I see in the elections process in Oregon, which I was, you know, kind of suspicious of. 2 weeks ago, I went over to Clackamas County and had the clerk lead me through the entire process from when a ballot arrives to the actual time that the final count is turned into the state, and there is no connection to the internet anywhere in the entire process until the very end when they go upstairs and submit the actual information. Computer-generated voting systems, because those are much easier to hack and to interfere with than paper ballots.
I'd agree with you on that, but let me ask you, if an illegal alien somewhere in America who's been living here for a decade or two and is not even in the country legally, if he fills out a form and registers to vote, where is that ever double-checked to make sure that somebody who's not a citizen does not get registered to vote and send a ballot?
Well, we're looking at software right now. We have current contracts that are coming up, and one of the aspects I'm looking for in new software is to ensure that we have the way to cross-check those things. And also, we're already cross-checking the death certificates and death records. You know, we want to make sure that once a person dies, they don't keep voting.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how that is. And so anyway, we're going to be trusting but verifying at every step of the way. And we have the computer technology to do just what you're asking. I just have to make sure that it's something that we can use here in Oregon.
But at this point, it's not in use. So if somebody registered to vote improperly because they're not a citizen, that would never be, or it would not likely be found out by the current systems in place.
I do not think that it is currently being checked. I believe that you're right there, although we are working on ways that we can verify. For instance, I'm asking to know when we have multiple ballots, say more than 10 ballots going to one address. Why not spot audit and just make sure that that's appropriate? What we found is that that is happening all over the state, but it's usually when it's a rest home or it's a fraternity house, a sorority house. I mean, there's different places where they all have the same address. And so we're checking in a very lawful way just to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to vote who's eligible to vote, but not others.
Absolutely. Ms. Secretary of State, it's a pleasure to have you on. You're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thank you. We'll be in touch.
The Secretary of State of the State of Oregon, Dennis Richardson, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And Dylan Honkoop joins me from our great affiliate station in Bellingham, KGMI. Dylan, it's good to have you back on the program today.
Absolutely. Great to be with you, Lars.
So what happened on Saturday afternoon in your community where Interstate 5 passes through?
Well, you know, they're protesting all the time up here in Bellingham. We're kind of like a little Portland here. And so they've been trying to figure out a way to get more attention. You know, these protests are all about the attention. So what they decided to do, they say, instead of blocking the main drag in downtown Bellingham, let's block the freeway. That's a good idea. So what they did is they actually had protesters roll up in vehicles, bring traffic kind of to a rolling stop, the opposite of a rolling start like you'd see in a race, and then a group of hundreds of people came out onto the freeway, shut it down essentially, and created a 4 or 5 mile backup right through Bellingham. What was crazy was at the other end of the backup, a crash happens, people are injured. It's become a huge, huge political football here in Bellingham right now.
Well, and in fact, they used, in addition to automobiles, do I understand they use pipes and chains as well?
Yeah, that's one of their specialties around here. They figured out how to pipe and chain themselves together. Exactly how they do that, I don't know. They did it before when Donald Trump came to Linden last year. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
They blocked up a main drag between Bellingham and Linden. And so they did the same thing across the freeway on Saturday.
And so as a result, emergency vehicles had a tougher time reaching the scene of this accident?
They had a hard time getting there. Of course, the crash, the State Patrol told me this morning, was a direct result of this protest. There was no question in their minds about that. So because of this protest, at least one person had significant injuries. It was a 5-car pileup, and one of those cars rolled over.
Well, so what are the police going to do when people have done this kind of thing and actually put lives at risk?
Well, that's what everyone here is asking. Where are the arrests? Why was the police left this scene? No one arrested. Everyone walked away apparently scot-free. So that's where everyone here is frustrated, saying, what's going on? Now, prosecutors, local prosecutors here say they're looking at it, and there are possibly going to be arrests yet. A lot of these people were brazen, like these protesters tend to be these days. They were doing Facebook Live videos. They were taking pictures of themselves. They've even spoken with some media outlets. We know one of them is a Western Washington University staff member. She was one of the organizers of this, and she's been on record talking about her involvement with this. It was on the local Democrat Party calendar that this protest was going to be happening, even though now the Democrats locally are backing away from it, saying, well, we didn't organize this at all. It just happened to be on our calendar. It wasn't our thing. So a lot of people are, again, saying, well, where were the arrests? And I asked State Patrol about this morning. I asked Bellingham Police to come on the air. They said they're still working on their messaging
you know that I have a lot of friends in law enforcement. I'm on law enforcement's side, but if they're working on spin on this to try to figure out how to spin it, let me ask it to you this way, Dylan. I'm talking to Dylan Honkoop from our affiliate KGMI in Bellingham, Washington. If all these folks are chained together, you would think that apprehending them would not be a problem. The police just come up and put their own bracelets on these jokers and say, all right, you're going to jail on this one. You're going to get cited because blocking a freeway is a crime, right?
It absolutely is. And that's why they say they're pursuing charges. Now, they tell me, and I asked point blank this morning, why were none of these people arrested? And they said, look, because of the dynamic, because there were hundreds of people there protesting and they only had initially three or four troopers on scene, they were worried about officer safety in going in and doing a bunch of arrests. I talked with the Whatcom County Sheriff up here. He said they were actually getting the old paddy wagon ready to do mass arrests. They were making arrangements at the decrepit Whatcom County Jail that doesn't have any extra room just in case they had to put a bunch of people in jail, but the crowd had dispersed by the time they ponied all that stuff up and got there. So that's their reason. And the State Patrol just says they didn't have enough people to do it. They were calling troopers in from down south as far as Snohomish County and beyond to try to get enough people in to actually go in and, I guess, bust out the handcuffs.
Look, I'm on the side of law enforcement, and I understand if they've got this huge protest, a freeway blocked, a traffic accident, all these things going on, you got to put the bodies, the police officer bodies, where the real threat to people's safety and their lives is. But on the other hand, you would think that one person with a cell phone camera could have snapped pictures of all these people and said, all right, we've got their pictures. We should be able to track them down. And we know that most of them are likely to be from the community or nearby, and that you would be able to track them down and then lean on some of them and say, look, you need to tell us who else was involved in this because you've committed a serious crime and you put people's lives at risk.
Well, the crazy part about it is these people weren't even trying to hide. Like I say, they were outspoken about it. They have their names all over it. Their photos are everywhere, and that's exactly what's happening right now, is people know who they are. Law enforcement knows who they are. Now, the prosecutor's office knows who they are, so I don't think we've seen the end of this one yet, because these people are going to have a hard time with as much photographic and video evidence out there, either on their part or of all the, you can imagine the ticked off people in their cars stuck there were taking plenty of pictures as well. You can bet that there's definite clear evidence of what was happening there, enough to put some of these behind bars.
How about this, Dylan? Is WWU going to suspend this staff member for taking part in a criminal activity like this?
I saw someone on Facebook say that they might just give her a commendation and raise for doing exactly what they're training students to do day in and day out.
This is the nature of WW, isn't it? Because they are a regular provider of good topics for my program, Dylan. And I know for you, they're probably a regular stopping point for you for things to talk about.
It college town and a liberal activist progressive city, yes, all the time. And to them, this is what free speech apparently looks like. This
no.
is what doing something about their cause du jour, it looks like, is it, to do something. And it doesn't matter that this is about a pipeline in a community over 1,000 miles away from here. This is doing something, blocking the freeway in Bellingham. That'll solve the problem.
Hey, Dylan, thanks a lot for having us on. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You bet. Dylan Honkoop from KGMI. To your calls now. Let's go first to Harry and Sisters. Hey, Harry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. I take it you called in about the man convicted of 21 crimes for defending himself against a mob.
I did, Lars. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I think this was a very flawed trial. For one thing, the prosecution called an unvetted witness that the defense was not able to vet. Another thing, and the judge allowed it. And the other thing I think that would be grounds for appeal for this guy would be that his attorney asked for a trial by judge and not by jury. And I would think it's probably harder to find a conservative judge than a conservative jury, even in Portland. So I'm hoping that one of the Second Amendment organizations will help out as an amicus in this case, because this is just a total miscarriage of justice.
I think you're absolutely right. Harry, thank you very much. And by the way, this man stands the chance of going to prison for 50 years because a crowd began advancing on him. They didn't like him because he was a guy who liked to take pictures of the protests they stage. Some of the same kind of protests, you know, blocking streets and blocking freeways and the like. And they were advancing on him. He pulled a pistol out for a few seconds to tell them to back off because they would not back off to his verbal requests. And then he was arrested, and the protesters were not. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Kathleen writes in, Lars, at Mike's trial, the lead witness for the defense, Ben Carenza, who had been arrested for making bomb threats, told the judge that he knew who Mike was, that he didn't like his videos, and he knew that he carried a pistol. So he called on anarchists who were with him and a Black Panther to surround Mike. His testimony was a gift to the defense and should have supported Mike's self defense, but the judge's decision was baked in from the beginning. No way they were going to let Mike go free. To your calls now at 866-439-5277. Let's go to Joe on Puget Island. How are you doing, Joe?
Morning, afternoon, Lars. Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's on your mind?
Well, this morning on my way in, I was hearing on the news about a guy, I believe it was in Woodburn, that was arrested for being an undocumented immigrant.
An illegal alien.
And, yeah. Well, I'm going to use the liberals term here to prove a point. I mean, he's undocumented, and they're up in arms because they say, you know, they grabbed the wrong guy by mistake. They were looking for his brother. He's a hardworking, tax-paying worker. And my question is, how can he be a tax-paying worker when he doesn't have a Social Security number or an INS number?
Well, there is a reason for that. And here's where it gets really crazy. But if you really want to know the answer to the question, I'll tell you. If you're illegally in the country, you apply for what's called an I-10 number, an individual taxpayer ID number. They call it an I-10, I-T-I-N. You have a Social Security number, I assume, so it would be illegal for you to apply for an I-10. It's illegal for me to apply for an I-10 because I have a social. The reason I-10s exist, Joe, is say a rich guy from Great Britain was visiting the United States and he said, gee, I really like that house on the Washington coast. I'd like to buy it. Well, to carry out a transaction like that, you have to have either a social or an I-10. So he could get an I-10. He could then buy that house. If he had a business, he could own a business. I mean, he could own a McDonald's in America. There's no law against that. A foreign national that owns a business here, or somebody from Canada could own a business in, say, Seattle. And they would have to have an I-10 because they're still responsible for paying taxes on the money they earn while they're in the United States. You know, the money they earn in the United States. So that's why I-10s exist. What the IRS has done under a few different presidents, Clinton, Bush, and then Obama, was they allowed illegal aliens to get I-10s even though they were not legally in the country, so that they could pay their taxes. But what it also allowed the illegals to do was apply for tax deductions because of foreign national children in either Canada or in Mexico. Those are the two countries we allow it in. And they got deductions. Now, they're not entitled to the earned income tax credit, but they are entitled to say, well, I've got six kids down in Tijuana, and so I want to take those as deductions on my taxes. So it's where a branch of the government called the IRS actually cooperated with illegal aliens to declare the money they had made illegally and then pay taxes on it. Why? Because the federal government got money out of the deal, even though American workers got cheated out of their work.
I was going to say, yeah, because I couldn't figure out. I was discussing with a coworker today, and we could not figure out how they're paying income tax without Social or INS number. I was unaware of the ITIN.
Well,
but another thing is, once they eliminate, deport the illegals that are here, then maybe that'll relieve some of the housing problem in Portland.
I think it would relieve a big part of it. And let me tell you something else. Did you do the math on the fact that they say this man has been here earning a living for 30 years? Do you know what year it was 30 years ago?
Yeah, it would be about 1987.
You're absolutely right. You do the math very well. Most people can't do that. Do you know what happened in 1986? Ronald Reagan, over, his strong, he didn't really think it was a good idea, but he said, okay, I'll sign the amnesty in 1986 if we start enforcing the law after that. That means this man entered our country right after the Congress granted amnesty to literally millions of illegal aliens. There was supposed to be just over 1 million. It turned out there were closer to 3 million illegals in this country. So a lot of us who object to amnesty say the minute you grant amnesty, foreign nationals, especially from Mexico, will say, hey, the United States is giving it away. They're giving away free citizenship. Let's go get some. And then what you get is you get another wave of people coming into the country. So he came into the country, by his own account of how things went, a year after the amnesty had been passed. And what happened was the government never lived up to its agreement with Reagan. If you sign the amnesty and amnesty the people who are already here, we will then start enforcing our border. Obviously, it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's just not right. I mean, the I-10 number should be... This should be a flag to the government saying, hey,
And what you ought to be really angry about is local news media all over this country, but especially here in the Northwest, will tell these sympathetic sob stories about a guy like this, this guy, Michael Loenza or Louisa, who had a Dewey 10 years ago. Did they kick him out for that? Nope. But a green card.
That's what brought on. We were looking for him, and they got his brother by mistake.
Yeah. And so, by mistake or because the two of them would swap identities to avoid, taking responsibility under the law. So when people tell me, well, gosh, he's an honest guy. He's an honest guy, except for the criminal activity he's engaged in by falsely identifying himself, by working a job illegally, by being in the country illegally. So... the stories that the news media is going to tell are going to be stories that say these poor people are all doing the right thing and America's doing the wrong thing. No, America is enforcing its laws. And people who are working here illegally like this, they should be gone from our country or come in legally one way or the other. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
We are ready.
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
All of this could have been avoided if we'd followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
The 45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
Lars.
And yes, together we will make America great again.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
Now, here's Lars Larson on FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network and glad to get your phone calls and emails too at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our quick poll today, should we introduce or allow the government to introduce man-killing grizzly bears to the Cascade Mountains? Yeah, we need another way for people to get hurt while they're out recreating on the public's land. That seems like a great idea. Representative Gina McCabe joins me now from the Washington House of Representatives representing District 14. Representative McCabe, thanks a lot for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
You have a bill that, or there is a bill at the Washington legislature that would mandate seat belts in school buses. Tell me about that.
I do. House Bill 1246 would ask the state of Washington to buckle up our kids on our school buses, just as though we do on our cars. I wouldn't run the bill if we didn't have a funding source, and OSPI Director Alan Jones had a brilliant way to pay for it that didn't touch the state budget, nor did it touch any of the schools or the local levies. So I pushed this bill forward, and we're working really hard on it. The funding source would be that when you talk to drivers throughout the state, one of their number one concerns is that the stop paddle violations happen, where the bus stops, the light goes on, the paddle goes out, and someone passes the bus anyway on the right or left. So in our state, May 1st this last year, there were 1,566 violations reported in our state in one day. So we did a point-in-time study, and it seems that that's typical throughout possibly other states as well. Those tickets are $419. And when I went to police and counties and said, you know, where's the money for this or what are we doing about this issue? They said, well, honestly, we don't have enough officers around the school zones in order to watch for that. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, when you take the 1566, which only half the drivers reported, and you times that by the 419, you're looking at over $650,000 a day.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take that number and you put that towards putting seatbelts on school buses starting September 2018, I can give a third of the money to police officers and law enforcement to watch closer in our school districts areas for these stop paddle violations, and I can give a third of the money to counties to process these new infractions that hopefully eventually stop happening and still put seatbelts on school buses.
Now, that's assuming that when you start doing vigorous enforcement and writing tickets for all these violations, assuming you catch them, that the number of violators isn't going to go down dramatically. And I would guess that when you start writing tickets for it, you'll get fewer people doing it. You think I'm right?
I hope so. I hope that there's less people that do the stop paddle violations. The great part about the bill is that the camera will ignite and take a picture only if you stop, if you go past the paddle. It only takes a picture of your license plate, so it's not a privacy issue, no passengers in the car. And if you don't run past the bus when children might be crossing the street, it doesn't pertain to you. This bill is not going to affect you. It's only for those people that bypass it.
So you do it mostly using a camera rather than having an officer present.
Well, what would happen is there's camera companies that want to go out on an RFP to put cameras on every bus in the state, and they will put the bus cameras on for free, they say, but their fee will come in the fact that they're going to monitor footage and look and say, hey, this is a person, we have a clear picture of this plate, and they'll process that and hand that through the police.
And they'll get a stream of the revenue as well.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, they're only asking for the money to be paid to watch the footage, and then so they're not asking for any additional money.
Well,
but they'll sell the equipment.
Yeah. How much are we talking about there? A few $100,000, or a few million?
They're saying they'll put them on for free. They'll just monitor the footage. So as far as what they're going to charge to do that, you know, with $650,000+ a day, you can afford to put seatbelts on school buses. You know, the National Highway Traffic Safety Association in 2015 came out pro seatbelts on buses for the first time in decades.
Well, I do want to get to that piece of it as well, because every time I've done a story on this and I've talked to the safety folks, you know, and you know, whether it's the state or the cities or the counties or the school districts themselves, they say, well, first of all, you know, in most, you know, because the school bus is such a big vehicle, it's one of the reasons we don't put seatbelts on public buses, transit buses either, because the vehicle is so large that usually it's not a matter of people being thrown around in the bus the way you worry about with a car that might roll over. And occasionally you do have buses that roll over, but it's very occasionally. Usually if there's a collision, the bus, you know, takes the smaller amount of the damage, and whoever hit them, unless it was a very large vehicle, takes the larger part. So they think that they that putting seatbelts on buses would be a good idea, despite the fact that we haven't had them for a long time.
Well, I think that technology's been our friend in that area. The buses, the seatbelts before, they said become weapons, and you have to buy more buses because it couldn't fit as many children, and all of those myths have been dispelled. The buses, seatbelts are lap shoulder belts, so they fit flush with the back of the seat. You can run your hand down the back of the seat. It's not a weapon now. You can fit three students in a seat. I think, you know, what the National Highway Traffic Safety Association said, and I think this was kind of the kicker, they said that the kids on our school buses in a rollover or a hard collision, which we're seeing quite a few of those throughout the nation recently even, is the same as, it's equivalent to clothes in a dryer. Those are our children. And so they are getting injured. And I think that if we can save a few lives, it's our responsibility in the state of Washington to keep children safe.
I agree.
When they go to school.
I'm not necessarily all the way against it, but how do you get the kids to get in the seatbelts?
They're already trained.
Well, look, you train kids to do all kinds of things, and then they do the opposite. So when I also see a lot of videos of kids on school buses that won't even listen to the driver. They will not do what the driver is telling them to do. What's a driver allowed to do if the kid said, I'm not wearing a seatbelt?
Well, the great part is that, like you said in the first part of your question, is that kids are already trained to put a seatbelt on. Kids are put in harnesses in moving vehicles on our roads from the day they come home from the hospital. In fact, the first time that kids get into a moving vehicle in their life ever is usually on a seatbelt without their parents.
I agree with all that. I mean, I've got a brand new grandbaby, and we put her in a safety seat right now, you know, that's built to all the modern standards. But I'm just asking, kids are also taught to behave well, and then they go to school and sometimes don't behave at school the way they do at home. So when the kid says, I'm not wearing the seatbelt, are you going to empower the driver to say, you have to, and I'm going to make you wear the seatbelt? I mean, I'm just wondering, when push comes to shove, what happens?
Well, I think it's the same with parents. If you don't put your seatbelt on your car, I'm a coach. I coached for 20 years, and whenever an athlete didn't have their seatbelt on my car, if I was moving them between games or practices, they had to actually stop. I would stop the car on the side of the road and have them walk around the car. I mean, there's little things that parents do, whatever that looks like to them, that have taught kids that when you get into a moving vehicle, you put your seatbelt on. So I don't think we need a bunch of training to do that. And I think we should empower the driver. There's actually even bus panels, and I don't know that Washington would be able to afford that right away, that have a light monitor up in your dash, just like in your car, that shows that, you know, seat 2 doesn't have a seatbelt on, for example, or seat 7 doesn't. And the good thing about keeping these children safe and restrained, basically, is it cuts down on your bullying. It cuts down on the other issues that we have, the discipline problems, and the driver can actually just focus on driving the bus. So there's a lot of pros and cons and good and bad about it. I just think it's really important that we have this conversation, especially if we have a funding source that doesn't rely on the budget or schools.
Would you also be in favor of installing seatbelts on transit buses? Just curious.
I think I'd need to look into that and see how that's different. I know that in our small town that I represent, you know, you can be 3 or 4 hours on a bus going to a basketball game. And it's not your typical stop-to-stop within the city, but 3 or 4 hours over mountain passes without a seatbelt on for children or clothes in a dryer as the traffic.
No, I completely agree with you. But
so
I
don't know. I'm really focused on this one, but that's a great question. And the other thing is, I've had parents come into my office at the Capitol and say, I have a handicapped child, and I have a special need child, plus I have a child that's not special need. And one is required to wear a lap shoulder belt, and the other isn't. So why is one of my children more important than the other?
That's a great question.
I didn't have an answer, hence the bill.
Well, I'd be curious to see how it works out. Do you think you've got the support to get it through?
I think that I do this biennium. I don't know. Every bill I've ever ran has a Democrat on line 2 for numerous reasons. One is the House is controlled by the Democrats here. And I think that I represent both Democrats and Republicans. So I think that I do have the support, but this bill is a really big bill. You're dealing with setting up a account in the Treasury where this fine money could go in and be distributed out. So I'm okay to just keep working really hard on this bill, answer all of the questions, make sure all of the entities and agencies are on board and everything's in place, and then passing it next year. If it doesn't pass this year, we did get a hearing. We had six pro, one other. I think it's just, you know, changing the mindset to saying that when you're in a moving vehicle, whether it's a school bus or your car, you really need to buckle up for safety. If it keeps us safer, then why wouldn't you wear it when you're in a vehicle?
I'd be in favor of that as well. I mean, I want to see kids be kept safe, but I'm just curious about when the rubber actually meets the road, whether the kids will do it or whether they'll decide to run the driver around the block. And I think I've seen plenty of videos of kids, you know, giving the driver a hard time. But good luck. What's the bill number?
It's House Bill 1246.
And Senate Bill 5054?
It's not a complete companion to that. That bill doesn't have a funding source. That one is straight out of the budget. So this one uses the stop paddle violation money. I'm pretty conservative. I want to make sure I run legislation that has money to back it up.
So I think that's a sensible thing to do.
I wouldn't run the bill if it didn't.
That's a good deal. Representative McCabe, thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting us be on your show. We're big fans.
That's Representative Gina McCabe from the 14th District in Washington State. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails. Did you hear that the sheriff of Spokane County, who we're going to talk to a little bit later on today, the sheriff showed up at a hockey game. He was watching the Spokane Chiefs play, and that's something I used to do quite a while ago when I lived in Spokane. He showed up at the arena. And they said, I'm sorry, Sheriff. He had all the right ID. You can't carry your gun. Now, he was wearing a suit and a tie. If he had been wearing his Spokane County Sheriff's uniform, they would have allowed him into the arena. But apparently, the folks running the arena, which is owned by the city of Spokane, decided that because he was out of uniform, wearing a suit and tie, which I can tell you an awful lot of sheriffs, when they go to, you know, some other kind of event that doesn't require their uniform, they dress very respectfully, that he was told he was not welcome to carry his gun into that arena, even though he's a law enforcement officer, because he wasn't wearing the right kind of clothes. Now, how crazy does that sound? Let's go to Richard, who is a bus driver. And maybe Richard can tell me the answer. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program. You heard the state representative from Washington State who wants seatbelts on school buses. How do you think that's going to work out?
Well, one of the reasons they do not have seatbelts on school buses is if the bus was to roll over, the driver would have a hard time getting to all the kids to say cut the seatbelt if they needed to, because the buses can hold up to 48 students, and it'd be hard for the bus driver to get to all the students to cut the seatbelts to free the students.
You're saying whether the bus is, you know, in an accident that flips it upside down or not, that the driver, if the vehicle's been tweaked and the seatbelts are still fastened and they can't get them unfastened easily, that it would be hard for him to get the kids out. Give them a seatbelt cutter. Isn't that a simple solution to it?
We have seatbelt cutters on the buses for our seatbelts, because the drivers have to wear the seatbelts, but it's still hard for us to maneuver clear through the back of the bus to cut every single seatbelt for the child.
Why? You walk
because
to the back of the bus, right?
The bus is so narrow, and you have to try and not hurt the child and lower them, per se, down to safety. And
now that's if the bus is flipped over, right?
Pressing on their chest, making it hard for them to breathe.
Well, but hold on a second. You're talking about the case where the bus is flipped over and now you got 48 kids hanging upside down. I understand that would be tough, but it would be a lot tougher if you'd been bounced on your head as the bus rolled over, right?
Right, but sometimes we cannot get out to save and protect the child from hitting their head if they try and release them themselves.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So the kid's in the seatbelt, he reaches down, hits the release, and then he falls to the floor.
Exactly, or the ceiling or whatever. Falls onto
the ceiling.
Even if it's on its side, yeah. Even if the bus is on its side, still falling onto the other kid.
Yeah, although, which one's going to do more damage? Falling down, you know, after the bus has come to a stop, or falling down as, say, the bus rolls down an embankment, which I would think, isn't that the more likely case when a bus gets into an accident? You don't flip them over real easy, do you, unless you go down an embankment?
No, it takes a lot of inertia and twist on it to flip them over.
Yeah. So you think, and tell me this, what would you, from your experience, how long have you been driving bus?
I drove bus for 2 years.
Okay. Do you think that most of the kids would comply with the rules and put the seatbelts on?
No.
That was my impression as well. I mean, I think that, bless her to the state representative. She's like, oh, they learned how to do this at home. So, of course, they'll do it on the bus. Well, yeah, maybe. But the kids do all kinds of, kids get in food fights at the school that they would never do in front of mom or dad, but they may do it in the school cafeteria.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Richard, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Let's go to, let me go to Jeff in Gresham. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars. That was the biggest cop-out I've ever heard.
Which?
On his part, the bus driver. Oh, it'd be hard. Really? Leaving that complete to the side. The ambulance chasers are frothing at the mouth.
Oh, the right lawyers?
Now. Oh, yeah. Because you're a bus driver. You're supposed to make, they're going to make some rule that says you have to make sure the kids are belted.
Right.
The kids are going to put the belts on. You start driving. They take the belt off. They do whatever. Little Johnny goes to talk to Susie. And now he's not wearing his belt. Bus gets in an accident. Johnny gets tossed down the aisle.
And the driver is going to be accused of not doing his due diligence by making sure that all 48 kids were all belted in for the entire length of the drive, including the last 2 minutes before the kid hits his stop. Thanks for the call. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
They call him Comrade One because it's cool. A contributing writer for Fox News, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Post, The New York Times, and a hardcore Democrat. He is Juan Williams on The Lars Larson Show.
Do you know how much hate mail I get about you coming on the program, Juan?
Wait a minute. I thought I told you to stop talking to my wife.
Actually, your wife is a sweetheart. She knows that she needs a gun to defend herself, and unfortunately...
Yeah, that's the same lady. You
won't get it for her. I'm doing great today, but I'm just curious. You have this theory that the Republican Party is turning on itself, and, you know, the rhinos, I guess we're getting rid of the rhinos, but the rest of the party, I think, is pretty solid. They're getting behind Donald Trump.
Well, that's not what the poll numbers show. Obviously, Trump's numbers are in the tank, and, I mean, the lowest we've ever seen for a president just out the gate. He really has not had a honeymoon, and I think, in large part, that's because there are a lot of Republicans who have yet to really, you know, rally to him. I mean, they did rally to him around the election. He won, but what we're seeing now in the polls is that they're just not so sure, and I think part of this is what we're seeing in terms of what's going on Capitol Hill with Speaker Paul Ryan, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. They, too, in terms of saying, oh, yeah, we're going to put up legislation about paying for your wall. Or, yeah, we understand what happened with the immigrants. Or, yeah, that episode in Yemen, that was a great success. He's just not winning over that establishment. And I think that's why you have people like Drudge and Sean Hannity now saying, hey, what about it, you Republicans? Get in line. You guys better, you know, start showing some results.
Isn't he doing exactly and everything that he promised to do? And the Republicans, I think, are going to have to, some of them, Paul Ryan is a bit of a rhino. They may have to be dragged kicking and screaming to actually do the things. But if, you know, he said on the campaign trail that he was going to do these things. He was going to get rid of Obamacare. He was going to build a wall. He was going to enforce the law. And that's just the start. And he was going to go after radical Islamic terrorism, which, you know, the previous administration couldn't even say the words. So now that he's doing these things, do you think it's that all the rhinos are surprised? You mean he's a politician who's actually doing the things he promised to do? What's wrong with that?
Well, that would be delightful. I think, in fact, then people like Drudge would think to themselves, gee, this is what we wanted, this is what we voted for, and so this is what we get. But to the contrary, when it comes up with issues like Obamacare, you have President Trump saying just the other day, this may take well into 2018. It's not something he's able to do now. And, of course, what you hear from the people that you deride as rhinos on Capitol Hill is this doesn't make sense because when we go out to town hall meetings, we're getting people who are angry and concerned that we will take away their benefits without having a replacement plan in place. So it's not only that, though, Lars. It's things like tax reform. Why hasn't tax reform happened? That was a central
problem. In 3 weeks from this Congress, when have you seen this other than after 9/11? When have you ever seen the Congress manage to bring about meaningful legislation in 3 weeks?
And when have you seen that Republicans have control of the House, the Senate, and the White House? And there is no effort, no progress on getting that kind of bill at least before them for a vote. Nothing.
Come on. We've got one more month, one more week before the man has been in office for a month. And you're already saying, see, he's been there 3 weeks and he hasn't accomplished anything from a government that's like one of these dinosaurs with the brain at one end. And it takes 10 minutes for the signal to go to the tail to tell the tail to move.
I agree with you, but I'm saying if it was just me, you know, given the way you introduced me as this wild-eyed leftist on your show.
And you are.
I'm not, but the point is, then you would say, well, that's just the left or the Democrats, you know, making stuff up. I mean, it's only 3 weeks. What's the big deal? But the point of the column I had in the Hill today was to say, wait a second, it's a lot of the people on the populist right who were so, especially in the media, who were so instrumental in boosting Trump and boosting Tea Party elements in the Congress.
That'd be me.
Now saying, we don't see that there's any progress being made by these people we put in office. Get it together, guys.
But it's not Trump who's failing to do this. It's the members of Congress, some of whom I think have determined, we don't like what this guy stands for, but we can't really get in his way because that won't work out politically. So let's just slow walk everything he does. In other words, only a little bit better than the Democrats who are openly slow walking everything.
Okay, so my point to you, and you were earlier critical of me on this is a divide in the Republican ranks, Lars. And so you can you want to put down some people, you don't like Paul Ryan, et cetera. Okay, but I'm just telling you that what you're seeing in the media, especially conservative media like you, people saying we don't like what's going on in Washington in the first few weeks of Trump. And I think that's what's getting reflected in the polls and what's driving down his numbers. So, I mean, that's what's going on.
Well,
by the way, I really appreciate your point. It's more directed at Congress than it is at Trump.
Yeah, because in fact, at the folks who are not getting the job done in terms of confirming nominees, I think Obama had 8 confirmed cabinet positions on his first day in office. I think he had 12 by the end of his first week. Have we hit 12 yet with Trump?
Yeah, but what a difference. I mean, you have a guy there up for Treasury Secretary. I think he's going to get confirmed, who somehow just neglected to mention $100 million. Oh, my God, he didn't put that down on his financial disclosure form. And you want that guy to just sail through?
Well, I'll tell you what, Juan. Can I compare him to Obama's Treasury pick? Do you remember Timmy Geithner, the guy who didn't know how to do his taxes, and he was in charge of the Treasury?
TurboTax or something. And but that's not comparable. $100 million? That ain't TurboTax territory.
Hey, I've never been that rich, but I assume if you're that rich, maybe Bill Gates probably forgets about $100 million, too. Because when you have that much money, you lose track of it. It's like finding a $20 bill in your pants after they come out of the wash.
Yeah, for those guys. But what I might
say for us.
For a number of these guys really have big money, and they have been slow to release their financial background. And then all of a sudden, Lars Larson says, hey, why are so few of these folks getting approved quickly? And the fact is that even the ethics office here in Washington said, slow down, gentlemen. We got to get this information before we put you in positions of power. And I think that's legit.
I'll tell you what. You know what I'd like you to do, Juan? Would you do one piece, and I promise it has to have an interesting answer, and it's about one of your heroes, Barack Obama, no longer in office. He's signing I think his first book is going to make him 20 mil. So, you know, that's nice. He was able to promote his other books in office without having the mainstream media get into a conniption fit that maybe he was getting some benefit out of this. But tell me this. I looked up his...
Wait. I think he wrote a children's book in office, didn't he?
Yeah, no, but he sold his other two books, you know, Dreams from My Father and other works of fiction.
Oh, my God. The guy ran for president and then won the presidency. That's going to get you some sales.
I know. I'm saying, isn't that a violation of ethics laws? But let me ask you the question this way.
and selling.
Oh, Kellyanne Conway saying Ivanka Trump makes nice dresses. Jeez, you guys can make a federal case out of anything. But here's the column I want to see.
That.
Right.
She said, "I'll make this a commercial." She literally said that.
She was having fun. Big deal.
Now
right here's the column I want you to write. I looked up Barry Obama's estimated net worth in 2009 when he took office. It was $1.3 million. Do you know what his net worth was when he left office?
No.
$12 to $15 million. It was in a range. They didn't know exactly what it was. Now, how did he manage to increase his net worth by tenfold during 8 years in office, where his regular salary was $450,000 a year, and I assume he spent some of that because they had all those nice weekends in the Hamptons. How did he manage to increase his net worth 10 times during his 8 years in office? His wife didn't work. He only had the paycheck from the White House. His entire paycheck from 8 years in office would have been $3 million. Somehow, he went from $1.3 million net worth to almost $15 million net worth while he was in the White House. How did that happen?
Lars, you're such a smart guy. I don't get this. I can only attribute this to the fact that you are so partisan. But guess what? The house he lived in Chicago, it was the house of the president. The value skyrocketed. Oh, the books that he wrote. Guess what? This is what you're talking about a moment ago. All of a sudden, the sales skyrocketed. Oh, but wait a second. You mean to say that when now Barack Obama gives a speech, goes out...
Before he left office, Juan... while he was in office, his net worth. Now, let's say his house...
Yes, the real estate value, the value of the book sales.
Okay, Then I want to know something. Is it okay if President Obama, being President Obama, caused his book sales to go up and he personally benefited from it? Is it okay as well for Donald Trump's business interests to go up while he's president?
These are ongoing business interests. The book.
Well, so is a book. So is a book.
Published.
Hey, Juan, you wrote a book. I know the name of the book. If you became president, God forbid, the people would probably go up in book sales. Is it okay for you to benefit from that?
Yeah. It's not as if, in the case with Donald Trump, is he's got ongoing business deals.
Isn't selling books an ongoing business deal?
With foreign government.
But Juan, isn't an ongoing book sale an ongoing business enterprise? You're selling books the whole time you're in office.
Nothing. Look, just by being president, it promotes the book. Is that your point?
Yes. He benefited personally and financially to the tune of about $12 million.
Going out to somebody and saying, I want to make a deal on a piece of property. I need some investment money. Or are you willing to clear this regulation so I can locate my
business? But Trump isn't doing any of that. He's handed it all over to the kids.
Oh, yeah. Did he divest from his business? Did his boys?
He handed over management to the kids the same way.
You are on weak ground.
Nancy Pelosi hands off her stocks to somebody else. Of course, her husband's still a very rich guy because he continued to do business while married to the House Speaker. And I'm sure that didn't hurt his business at all. But you guys know how to make a federal case out of anything a Republican does. But when a Democrat does it, it's just, that's just book sales. Big deal. Do you really think he sold 12 million?
You think that if there was a Democrat who couldn't find $100 million and disclose it on his financial forms, you wouldn't be raising holy hell? Of course you would.
Elizabeth Warren forget to disclose the fact she had a $1.5 million line of credit on her house from a bank?
I don't know.
Yes, she did.
You are down in the weeds looking for something, but you know what? I think you're not going to find
I don't know about the weeds, Juan. I wish the weeds around my house had $1.5 million in them because they don't. All the weeds around my house have in them is dirt. Juan, it's a pleasure to have you on as always.
Thanks, Lars.
You bet. Juan Williams from Fox News. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is such a pleasure to welcome to the program the Sheriff of Spokane County, Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich. Sheriff, it's the first time we've talked on the air. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
Well, thank you.
So what happened the other night when you went to watch the Chiefs play and you're there to see the hockey game and you go in a suit and tie and you're all dressed nice and then they tell you you can't come in with a gun and you're the sheriff?
No, it was actually a little worse than that, Lars. I was actually there representing Spokane County because the charity behind the badge had asked me to attend the Spokane law enforcement folks in the area. We're playing a charity game against Tri-City law enforcement. So when I walked in, they said, you know, Sheriff, we can't let you in. You're carrying. I went, time out. I'm on duty. And they said, well, we have our orders and the rules. And I went, let me get this straight. You're telling me that the on-duty law enforcement can't come in the arena carrying? And what I didn't realize at that time, that just prior to that, they had tried to prevent two uniformed Spokane Police Department reserves, which fully commissioned, fully uniformed, same uniform as any other SPD officer, they tried to have them disarm. And I guess they were able to finally negotiate that out. But I didn't have time to wait for managers to come down, so I put my gun back in my car and went and represented the sheriff's office at the event.
I sure hope the city council and the mayor can get this straightened out, because they own the arena, right?
It's actually a governance board, and I understand that there are several entities that appoint people to the board. So I had a meeting with the arena board members, CEO, and general operations manager at noon today, and they assured me that this would never happen again. And they said that they have designed a way for all law enforcement, both on-duty, off-duty, and retired, to be able to come into the arena and carry. And, Lars, they had to do that because Washington state law says law enforcement, retired, on-duty, or off-duty, regardless, are exempt from any rules about carrying within the arena.
Well, that's sensible.
The Constitution also says that.
That's sensible, Sheriff. I mean, we want you guys to be armed. We want you to be there so that if something bad goes down, I mean, think about, I hate to say it, but think about what a potential target any large public gathering is.
It is, and if you look at the history of active shooters, many of those have been stopped by off-duty law enforcement. So the managers of and board members of the arena were very gracious. They apologized. I accept their apology, and they are changing the rule, and law enforcement on, off duty, and retired will be able to carry inside the arena.
That is fantastic. Sheriff Knezovich, it's good to have you on the program. We look forward to having you on other occasions, and I'm glad to hear here's a problem that, you know, happened, and now it's straightened out. I think that's fantastic. Thank you so much for the time.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Glad to do it. Sheriff Ozzy Knezovich from Spokane County. Can you imagine telling the sheriff he can't come in with his gun? You got the Lars Larson Show.